that, and even if there was, it wouldn't do the job. So we have to reduce our emissions. So as a group of students, the first thing we did was try to propose just any idea that we could possibly come up with to reduce those emissions. And here's a table that we created with some of the, I guess, more interesting ideas or the productive ideas. On the left, there's a brief description of what the ideas are. Then there's a column for the carbon reduction, which is pretty much just how much carbon can it reduce in a given year. The next column is the cost to reduce all of that carbon. And the final column is a ratio that we created to compare each one of these options on a simple cost to reductions basis. So pretty much what's the most cost-efficient way to reduce our emissions. So some of the ideas that we came up with, the first one was giving a electric vehicle to a student every month, just Kelvin donating it. We were fond of the idea, but it's pretty costly and it doesn't really get us very far. Actually, on this table, it's the worst option. You can tell by the $17,000 per metric ton per year. Other ideas included campus safety in electric vehicles. Right now, they drive around a fleet of mini SUVs and golf carts, I think. I don't know. But they're just driving all over the place all the time, circling campus and making sure that nothing bad happens. They're protecting us, and it's great. But we think they could protect us in electric vehicles just as well as internal combustion vehicles. So we were proposing that because the electric vehicle would not emit as much as an internal combustion vehicle. Another option that we came up with was Kelvin-owned bicycles. And pretty much what this is just a whole fleet of bikes that Kelvin owns. They all look the same, are maintained by a common group of students on campus. And any student that wants to can come up and take this bike wherever they need to, as long as it is on campus or in any designated area off campus. It's about three-quarters of a mile to a local D&W grocery store, so that could be a place that's pretty common for Kelvin students to go. Other places are Reed's Lake, which is a lake pretty close to campus. There's a park on that lake, a walking district type of downtown area, and Gaslight Village. All places within 3 to 4 miles or so of campus, but most students right now just drive there. But if we assumed if Kelvin owned a whole bunch of bikes and offer them to students, students would be more likely to bike to these locations as opposed to driving to them. We'd also have to improve awareness and stuff to our student body to make sure that they actually knew why the bikes were there. And we'd probably have to beef up our campus safety a bit to make sure all the bikes didn't get stolen. Other options, adding a bike lane on Lake Drive. Lake Drive is it's a fairly busy road out of the north side of our campus, and it's not very biker-friendly. This is also the road that you drive to get to Reed's Lake or Gaslight Village or downtown Grand Rapids. So just making the area more biker-friendly was the idea there. The next one is full rapid subsidization. The rapid is Grand Rapids' form of public transportation. It's just kind of a big busing network. And right now, any Kelvin student can pay 50 cents for a ride, but it doesn't seem like that's getting into students' head too much, and we figured a full subsidization, a free ride, sounds a lot better than a 50-cent ride, and maybe students would be more likely to jump on board then. Renewable energy production. Right now we have a series of demonstration projects on campus that allow students to understand how wind energy works, how solar energy works, how geothermal heating and cooling works. We have some professors and students in the process of studying feasibility of hydroelectric dams and wind turbines in other locations around Grand Rapids. But at this point, they're nothing more than demonstration turbines. So we're considering something that would actually generate a significant amount of electricity or energy. Other options were green energy purchasing, where you simply tell the utility company, hey, I don't want any of that electricity from that coal plant. I just want all the stuff coming from those wind turbines. And so that by that way, you're just, I guess, kind of voting with your dollar by saying, you know, I don't want the corrupt energy. And hopefully that promotes electric companies to build more wind turbines and less coal plants. Carbon offset purchases. I'll get into this more later, but that was another option. Another one was temperature drops in our buildings. We seem to always have very comfortable to warm temperatures in each one of our buildings, and we thought it wouldn't hurt to drop that 3 degrees and put on a sweatshirt. All Kelvin students have them with our brutal winters, so it'd be fine. And then also increasing daily commuter or daily commuter fees with increased rates, as opposed to a current annual parking fee. I think we pay like $35 or something, and we can park all year long anywhere on campus. So we thought if we charged a student a dollar every single day that he parked on campus, or 50 cents or whatever, then any time that he decided not to drive to campus but to bike to campus or walk or whatever, that first of all would save him 50 cents or a dollar, but it would also decrease the amount that students are driving to and from campus. So these are, I guess, yeah, as I mentioned before, a list of some of the possible solutions that we had. And all of this kind of boils down into three main categories, the first being green energy purchasing, second, carbon offset purchasing, and conservation of energy, just simply use less, and then finally, renewable energy production. In the next four slides, I'll get into each one of these with a bit more detail. With green energy purchasing, green energy, as I said, you can just tell your utility company, I don't want energy from the coal plant, I want it from those wind turbines. And they're willing to do that, but you have to pay a little bit more for it. With Consumers Energy in Grand Rapids, it's 5 cents per kilowatt hour in addition to the 10 cent per kilowatt hour fee that Kelvin would already be paying. So there's a sizable cost to it, actually, a 50% increase in the rate. But in order to completely offset any of the energy that Kelvin purchases from off campus, it would cost $1.1 million, which is 1.2% of Kelvin's annual $92 million budget. So 1.1 looks pretty sizable, but when you look at it in the grand scheme of what Kelvin spends on everything, it's working with 1.2%. So that's an option that we considered also. Carbon offset purchasing. Pretty much how this works is there are a couple different companies around the world that will take your money and use it for sustainable projects, such as building wind farms or improving the efficiency of other energy generation sources and things along those lines. The two main companies that are doing this are the European Union and TerraPass.com. And pretty much, yeah, how it works is you just give them money, and they devote that money to reducing emissions somewhere else. And this is great for the rest of the world, but for us, we thought it was just a cop-out. We're just saying, hey, you know, we want to emit all of this carbon, so we're going to pay you to do something about it. But it's an option that could bring solutions elsewhere. The third is conservation. I mentioned decreasing temperatures in buildings. More specifically, we were going to propose decreasing temperatures by 3 degrees Fahrenheit in all the dorm buildings. And over Christmas break, when nobody's around, dropping it 10 degrees. And this would save actually a significant amount of heat energy used on campus. Another one is just reducing electrical consumption. There are a couple different groups on campus working right now on using a system to determine when students or professors are or are not in lecture halls or in offices and things along those lines, just with simple occupancy sensors. And so when people come into the room, not only the lights turn on, but the heat turns back on. And when people leave the room, the lights turn off and the heat turns back off. So this way we're not, filling a room with heat when nobody's there to enjoy that warmth. So it's conserving a little bit of energy that way. Also through awareness, we can tell the student body, you know, you don't need your computer running all night because you're going to sleep there anyway. Why not just shut it off for those 8 hours and save that electricity? Also shutting off lights when leaving rooms. Most of our buildings aren't yet equipped with the occupancy sensors that detect when to turn on and off heat and light. Reducing electrical consumption is another great way to conserve energy. And then the fourth one is renewable energy production. If we're not going to buy it or pay somebody else to take care of it and we're still going to use it, then we might as well generate it ourselves and generate it without emitting carbon. One great way to do that is through wind energy. The picture on the right here, it's actually nothing to do with Kelvin. It's a wind turbine from the Fenton Wind Farm in southwest Minnesota where my parents live. I kind of like the picture because it shows you a bit of a scale to how big these things are. Right at the bottom of the tower, right here, you can see a gold Cavalier and two people standing there. And they're standing right at the base of the turbine, and my older sister is about a quarter mile down the road, and she had to be there to fit the entire turbine in there. So that gives you a bit of a scale as to how massive these things are. But anyway, our idea was to purchase, or we could purchase some of these, and use the energy generated by the wind that these harness to power Kelvin's campus. we took all the options that we came up with, lots of brainstorming, and proposed a new, or came up with a neutrality plan. And what this was just simply our way of saying to the administration, if you were to do this, this is a way to become carbon neutral within a certain time frame, within a certain budget, and things along those lines. It's not necessarily the best solution, or the, it's far from the only solution, but it is a solution. What we came up with was installing 4 wind turbines. This will offset the emissions from energy purchasing and use. Energy purchasing and use was the largest source of emissions for campus. So if we generate all of our own energy in a clean fashion, that huge piece of the pie is completely eliminated and our emissions are shrunk significantly. The next one was just general awareness, letting the student body and the local community know that driving to campus every single day isn't really necessary. You can bike there almost as quick, and it's a lot better to bike there. Most people don't know that driving can be harmful. So just general awareness, educating people. Another one is to implement options to minimize commuter traffic, like those daily parking fees and things along those lines. Kelvin is currently, somewhere between the middle and the end of a construction of a massive new field house for their excellent athletes that they like to ship around the world to compete. And one benefit to this field house is that it's covering a road that goes right through the middle of campus. So this makes our campus slightly less commuter-friendly. Or not commuter-friendly, but vehicle-friendly, I guess. You have to walk around a lot more than you can't just drive right through the heart of campus. So that is good to our athletes. The fourth option is purchase carbon offset credits to cover remaining emissions. And I mentioned earlier we all believe that this is kind of a cop-out solution. It's not changing the way we act. It's not changing the way we behave or even what we believe. It's just, you know, saying, hey, we're aware that what we're doing is wrong, but we don't want to do anything about it. So here's some money. Somebody else do something about it. But if we've gotten ourselves as far as we possibly can, this might be a solution to bring us the rest of the way. So these are the points that we picked for our neutrality plan. And what this has done for us is it's taken this pie, or these two pie graphs, and it's shrunken the emissions graph back down to size equivalent to the sequestration graph. So that in the long run, our emissions equal our sequestration, and we are carbon neutral. Well, we aren't, but we would be. this is a graph. Kind of takes a second to digest, but ultimately what it shows is the next 40 years, which is what we considered in our plan. The time is on the horizontal axis. On the left, there's the account balance in millions of dollars, and that corresponds to the blue line on the chart. The right axis is net carbon emissions and metric tons of carbon emissions, the MTCE, and that corresponds to the red line. In the first year, you can see on the red line in the upper left corner, just a small dip happens there. And the reason for that is because we said with all of the finances that we put towards this project, in that first year, we are just going to promote awareness and simply promote awareness by purchasing bikes, improving commuter or pedestrian-friendly campuses, and decreasing commuter traffic and things along those lines. It doesn't make a very big dent in the amount that we emit each year, but it makes everybody aware of what's going on, and it says this is what Kelvin's all about, and this is what we're working towards. The next 10 years, we don't reduce our emissions at all, but as you can see, our account balance increases dramatically. That account balance comes primarily from a single increase in the tuition. I think it was right around $150 the first year, and then that balance from each year was put into this fund from each student. And at the end of 10 years, we would have enough money to offset emissions for the rest of our plan, at least, and a plan after that, which, I mean, could bring us as long as the administration wants to take it. But at the end of that 11th year then, what we would do is we would buy one wind turbine and use that to offset 1/4 of our energy emissions. And then the rest of the emissions that we're responsible for, we would pay TerraPass.com enough to offset what we've done so far. So like we said, it's kind of a cop-out solution, but that covers our backs in that 11th year there. Then a few years down the line, You can see once that red line drops off, it stays at zero forever. The blue line continues to skyrocket. Well, not really skyrocket, but it increases. What happens is every 5 years, we build one new wind turbine. The wind turbines are engineered to last, I believe it was 40 years before they needed to be replaced, possibly 20. I'm not sure. But anyway, at the end of its life cycle, we would replace it with another one, which would be budgeted in there. And so we would have a series of four wind turbines that are completely offsetting all the emissions from energy use because we're generating all of our own green energy. And then the agreement that we would have with the administration, I guess, if they were to choose to accept it, would be that any electricity that we were purchasing beforehand, the fees from that go into this green energy fund, which corresponds to this blue line. Because once we have our own wind turbines, we don't need to pay for our own electricity because we're getting it from those. I hope I've done a decent enough job explaining how this all works, but it's kind of a visual representation of how our carbon emissions would work with our 40-year plan and how the budget works with that also. So the steps for Kelvin College to take now, first of all, public awareness. It's not going to solve the problem right away, but it gets everybody thinking about it, and it's kind of that initial shove. Once everybody knows there's a problem, then we can start solving it. And at this point, we don't think everybody knows there's a problem. The next thing to do is establish a green energy fund. There's a whole series of sources for this, including government grants, donations, which Kelvin seems to be great at getting with our President Biker. He's a very well-networked man. But then also the main source would be through a one-year increase in tuition by $150, which when tuition is increasing 7 to 8% each year, that doesn't put too much of a bump in the increase there. So once that Green Energy Fund is established and constantly growing, we would commit to a neutrality plan. We would prefer that they commit to the plan that we measured out for them, but that's only a sample. They could commit to just about whatever plan they want. And then the final step is just implementation. Make sure that what they commit to actually gets done. At this point, we'd like to make these acknowledgments, all the same as the first presentation, but Professor Warners and Professor Hewn are the two professors that got a whole bunch of students thinking about these sorts of things and coming to this solution. Professor Dornbos and Professor Pierce helped us a lot with lots of information, I guess. They know a lot about this and have been looking at this already, so they're very valuable user resources. Vice President Henry DeVries really stepped up a lot and talked to us about what was actually feasible with Kelvin and what could be done. The physical plant brought us on tours of the campus and got us to know a lot, and Christine Prinz did a lot of research that she'll tell you about next, but we used a lot of her research, so we're grateful for that. Are there any questions? Yes, there are.
You can go ahead and pick your
I think I saw your hand first.
A couple of related questions. First of all, what capacity factor did you assume for your turbines?
The question was, what capacity factor did we assume for our turbines? We assumed that each turbine was capable of producing 800 kilowatts of power.
The typical turbine has an operating, when you put them onto a wind farm, is only going to be 20% over a year of its rated output capacity.
That's not typical, 30% is typical?
Okay, Pacific Northwest, near the Tri-Cities, we are getting our local ones are running at about 20, maybe slightly better in other places. You have the other problem, where do you get your baseload generating capacity? Because the wind goes up, the wind goes down, and on a still day in the middle of winter, when you have no wind, if you're off the grid, where do you get your baseload spinning reserve from?
Okay, those are two great questions. I'm not sure how to repeat them, but I guess some of our information was based on the demonstration wind turbine that we have on campus. It's been in operation for, I think, about a year now, possibly more. But we've been collecting data from that just through a series of instrumentation that tells us when is it windy, when is it not windy, and what sort of potential can we get from wind turbines. So that kind of tells us, you know, when is the wind on, when is it off, and what can we get from that. I believe the 80 kilowatt hours of power capacity assumes that it's not spinning full speed at all times. I believe that's what we received from the actual manufacturers of these turbines, saying this is a typical load that they produce.
You still have got a terrible problem with making the numbers work. You've got to get your base load from somewhere.
You can get a net meter in Michigan.
This is good. You got your committee arguing over
it. Yes. Yes.
Have you looked at the spot for a wind turbine? It's about a half mile north down the East Belt Line, and on the east side of the there's quite a hill there that we used to ski and slide down. So there's a spot where probably has the best wind anywhere in the area. And maybe it's developed now, I don't know. Also, I know that on the Thornapple River at Cascade, there used to be a dam just before it was under the highway. And I think it disables the generating capacity of that. We might look at whether there's any benefit in sponsoring or reinstituting power from that. And thirdly, have you looked at the most serious, very serious energy drain, and that is cutting down on the size of the amplifiers in your sound system?
The question, or rather statement, I guess, was one about a half mile from Kelvin. There's a sizable hill that could be good for wind. Also in the Lowell Ada area on the Thornapple River, there's a dam that might not be actually in use right now. And then third, we speak too softly. I apologize. We actually did debate quite a bit where the locations would be for the wind turbines. Out of spite a little bit for our president, we decided that we wanted to put them on his property on Lake Michigan. But we didn't actually write that in our report. Yes, and back.
There's a couple of considerations you have to break into. One is local zoning laws, government regulations. Can you build, even the economics should kick out, the winds kick out, can you actually do it? The second thing is, why is solar totally ignored in the situation?
Okay, the question was, have you looked into zoning considerations? And second, why is solar overlooked? The zoning considerations have been considered. They weren't in this project, but when the demonstration wind turbine was constructed, the group that did that had to confront all of those issues because they did actually construct the turbine then. And pretty much the answers that they came is that if we wanted a wind turbine, the capacity that we measured out with this plan, it would not be able to go on our campus. The community around there just wouldn't support it. So that would be an issue. The wind turbines would have to go somewhere else. The second was considering solar. We also have solar demonstration solar panels around campus, which generate little to none, but give us information through instrumentation. And I guess what we figured out is that there's kind of a cool graph, actually, on Professor Hune's office door that says, whenever the wind is up, the solar's down. Whenever the solar is up, the wind's down. And you can see over the past few years how those have oscillated back and forth. Well, I guess there's only about a year's worth of data where the two coincide. But you can kind of see the solar peaks and troughs. And I guess that isn't something we considered just because it seemed simpler to go with the wind. I believe we were in a bit of a time crunch at the end of the semester to come up with a plan. But it is definitely an option. And we do have a lot of buildings on campus that have, you know, just open roof space. So it could definitely be something considered for the future.
May I ask one?
Yeah, please.
Governor Schwarzenegger has decided that California should reduce its greenhouse gases, that's including methane and other sources, to 1990 levels by 2020, which is 10% less than today's emissions rate. That today is 14 tons per person per year in California. I don't know how that compares with your campus rates per student and faculty, but he wants to reduce that to 10 tons per capita per year by 2020. But that's just the beginning. He wants to cut that 80% below today's rates. I'm sorry, below the 1990 levels by 2050. Now, but that's easier than what you're doing, right? You're trying to go to zero.
Mm-hmm.
So if you adopt Governor Schwarzenegger's goals, does that make your life a whole lot easier and more attainable?
Well, I would say it would. The question, I guess, pertaining to Governor Schwarzenegger and his goals for California, it seems like his goal isn't quite as high as the goal that we set out with Calvin. And but we are Christians, so we have higher goals. I guess either way, it doesn't make our life any easier because we just created a theoretical plan for a solution. It would make our administration's lives significantly easier, though, because they wouldn't have to adopt as much of a commitment. Yeah, I mean, it would be easier, but he's also dealing with an entire state of quite diverse people, and we're dealing with 4,500 to 5,000 people that fit pretty well within a fairly unified bubble or stereotype of people types. So I think we have an easier group to work with, being much smaller and much more unified. But yeah, it'd be easier to decrease our goals a bit, I guess. Yes. Yep. Yeah, question in the back.
How does your plan compare, or your proposal compare with other campuses? Like you mentioned, or maybe in the previous one, about how many college presidents have signed on some kind of agreement. Do these college presidents have other plans, or is it just a signatory sort of thing? How does your plan compare to theirs?
All right. The question is, how does our plan compare to the plans of other institutions that have signed on to the president's agreement? I guess by signing that, what you're agreeing to is that you're going to educate the student body and educate the community at your institution so that they know, you develop that awareness, I guess, let them know what's going on. And then you're also supposed to take steps to improve your efficiency, but they don't very clearly outline this is exactly where you have to be by this certain time. So if our administration were to take this challenge and say, yeah, we want to be carbon neutral in 40 years, I would say that would probably be one of the more aggressive institutions. But at this time, we haven't even signed on to the president's commitment to educate people and make small improvements, let alone commit to get rid of emissions completely. But there are also lots of other institutions that are doing great things already, taking great steps and have done feasibility studies comparable to this. So I would say at this point in time, we're not further ahead than any of the other fellow institutions. Yes.
Maybe we have time for one more.
With respect to those to whom you would make your carbon dollar payments that you spoke on as a cop out,
mm-hmm.
I think you have to use that terminology.
Yes.
What do you know about those companies and the extent to which the dollars that are paid to them actually result in any significant event?
All right, the question is in regards to carbon offset purchasing, how do those companies operate, I guess? What's the guarantee that what they're doing is actually useful? And that has definitely been a hot topic, not just at Kelvin, all around the nation. You can tell by looking at different places, there are different fees for offset purchasing. The European Union, I think, averaged right around $32 for a metric ton of carbon emissions, while TerraPass.com averaged about $11 per metric ton carbon emissions. So I guess you could use that dollar amount to kind of compare the efficiencies of the two. For less money, you're supposed to offset the same amount of metric tons. But there's always the question of, you know, are they actually doing it, and is it really that great? It's hard to say. We didn't talk to anybody from any of those institutions or companies, so we're not really sure, you know, what would they actually do. Right.
Would you then consider a companion agricultural development project in a developing country that you could then operate through Calvin as well?
Yeah, the follow-up question was then, in regards to those concerns, would you consider an agricultural development type of program in a third world country? Is that correct? Where we could kind of oversee how things are going. We did talk a little bit about, when we were bringing up those concerns with all the students, talked about possibly doing something not through TerraPass or European Union, but something with just directly Consumers Energy in West Michigan, where we say we want, you know, we want to pay you to do this project and build these wind turbines or make this more efficient or something along those lines, something where we could have that interaction and actually see the results of the money that we donate to that project. So I would say anything that we can watch, anything that we can see the results to would be, yeah, very well liked. And I'm sure any sort of agricultural development in a third world country would be, all the better, because that's helping people other than ourselves. And we definitely have strong convictions there as well.
Thank you.